This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download, the podcast about the themes driving markets and the economy now and in the future. On today's show, companies have been scrambling for cash in the wake of the pandemic in an attempt to shore up their balance sheets, and tapping investors for extra money via the stock market is back in vogue. We look at why a company might choose to raise equity.
I would say there's probably a bit of a perception that most companies do this from a position of weakness, but actually our research showed that the opposite was true.
Who benefits?
When I started doing this work, I was hoping I would show this was a win-win for companies and investors. So great for companies, they can raise money. Great for investors because they can do well. But actually, it's not quite as simple.
And what investors should pay attention to when companies come calling for cash?
None of that stuff mattered. Like, the predictive power was basically zero. But one factor actually investors would be wise to pay attention to is actually refreshingly simple.
Worries over the long-haul travel slump have knocked more than 80% off Rolls' shares this year. But Britain's best-known engineering firm is planning to raise a total of £5 billion, that's $6.5 billion, and that will include £2 billion from shareholders.
Rolls-Royce recently raised around £2 billion in equity from investors to repair its balance sheet from the effects of the pandemic, it joined a growing list of companies to do so. And it is in good company. Existing listed companies raised around £17 billion from the London Stock Exchange in the first 6 months of 2020, double the average of the previous decade, and a record amount for the first half of the year outside of the 2008-2009 financial crisis. Stock markets had been losing ground in the popularity stakes to private equity and debt when it comes to a company's choice of where to raise money. However, the trials brought on by COVID-19 have boosted their credentials. This is good news for companies. However, for investors who back them, the results have been less clear cut. Duncan Lamont, head of research and analytics, has done some digging around for us. So, Duncan, welcome to the show. How have you been?
Not too bad at all. Thanks for having me back on.
Duncan's researched over 1,600 secondary offerings that have taken place on the London Stock Exchange since 1998 and found that a sizable proportion go on to perform very well, but a similar proportion lose investors most of their money. We'll get to the trends that separate the winners from the losers when companies make a cash call later in the show. But in part one, we're going to look at what we mean by equity fundraisings and why companies do them in the first place.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
So, Duncan, the first question, I suppose, is what do we mean by a secondary offering?
So these are existing public companies, so existing companies on the stock market who are raising more equity. So what people often think about the stock market as a way for companies to IPO, an initial public offering, and raise money. But in a number of cases, that's actually only the first time of many times that those companies will come to the stock market and ask to raise money, raise new equity. Some of the ways that are probably most commonly known are rights issues and placings. So a rights issue is where a public company will go out to all its existing shareholders and say, I want to raise a certain amount of money. And as an existing shareholder, you have the ability to buy some new shares in that fundraising to provide some of that capital. And you'll be offered that in proportion to how much of the company you hold. For example, you might be told for each share you currently hold, you can buy 5 new shares as part of the equity raising. This is quite a fair way of raising money because everybody who's a shareholder before gets the opportunity to participate. And if everybody takes up their rights after the rights issue, they will hold the same proportion of the company as they did beforehand. The other common approach is a placing. And rather than offering money, all shareholders the ability to participate, this is where a company will raise money from a more limited number of either existing or new shareholders. Sometimes only one. Because of this, it would actually leave existing shareholders owning a smaller part of the company afterwards because they don't get to buy the new shares. And as a result, there's generally restrictions on how much a company can raise in that way.
And just briefly, what are the reasons that companies might tap the stock market for more cash?
So there's lots of different reasons, actually. It might be because you want to buy another company and you want to raise the money. It might be because you've got growth expectations and you think actually you just need some extra money to help kind of turbocharge your prospects, to expand production. It might be because you're in difficulty. And I guess that's what we've seen a lot of this year. Actually, companies who've really struggled this year, who have decided that they need to raise some extra money to shore up their balance sheets and give them a stronger footing. We saw the same, I guess, back in the financial crisis when there was a lot of money raised by the banks who needed extra cash just to put themselves on a more solid basis to move forwards. There's probably a bit of a perception that most companies do this from a position of weakness, i.e. I am a struggling company, I need some new money, otherwise I'm going to be in trouble. But actually our research showed that the opposite was true. The majority of companies that raise new equity have actually done it from a position of relative strength. So their share price having risen in the previous 12 months and actually them having outperformed their sector of the equity market.
And we mentioned earlier that the stock market in the past has lost out to the debt markets in recent years when companies want to raise money. Why is that?
So this is something I've written about myself a few times previously in our main paper, is one called What's the Point of the Equity Market, which I'd encourage listeners to look up if they want to get into the numbers. But there's basically a couple of main factors here. One is the ease of raising money from other sources. So debt and private equity have become cheap and more plentiful. So it's been easier to raise very large amounts of money that you might not have been able to do outside of the stock market in the past. And the second driver is the fact that the increased cost and hassle of being a public company, whether it's through regulation, transparency, litigation risk, short-termism, there's a whole host of reasons why being a director of a public company isn't much fun. And if someone is prepared to write you a check without you putting yourself through the ringer, then actually that's counted against the stock market in the cost-benefit analysis.
So that's why companies might tap the market for more money. In the next part of the show, we're going to look at the good and the bad of equity fundraisings.
Get in touch with us by email at schroederspodcasts@schroeders.com or visit our website, schroeders.com/investor download.
Okay, so let's start with the positives. What is good about secondary offerings?
So what is good about secondary offerings is the fact that, particularly in situations like we are right now, it enables companies to raise very large amounts of money from a large number of shareholders relatively quickly. If you want to raise money from private equity, there's going to be a smaller number of investors you can go and talk to. You might only have one private equity investor in your company. You might have a couple. So there's less of them who you can approach. The flip side is those investors are going to know you very, very well, and you're going to know which ones will be able to potentially write you a check. But the stock market does provide that basis of raising lots of money relatively quickly from lots of shareholders. And I think that ability to raise equity in particular this year has enabled some companies to put themselves on a more sound footing, not having to borrow themselves through the crisis. And that potentially actually sets themselves up for more sustainable growth once we get through the other side of it.
So Duncan, probably what's most important to investors is how do the companies perform after they raise cash? So what have you found in your data?
So as you said, so what I did was I analysed over 1,600 of these secondary equity offerings, which took place on the main market of the London Stock Exchange between 1998 and the first quarter of 2020. And when I started doing this work, I was hoping I would show this was a win-win for companies and investors. So great for companies, they can raise money. Great for investors because they can do well. But actually, it's not quite as simple. So maybe we'll start off with some of the bad news. Most companies that actually raised new equity in this way went on to deliver negative shareholder returns. Almost two-thirds underperformed their sector in the 5 years after raising money. So it's not great when you think about it like that. A majority of them delivering negative returns, underperformed their sector. But what we find actually is there's a really interesting distribution to these returns. What we did was we kind of looked at saying, What percentage of companies would, say, fall in value by more than 90%, more than 70, 60, 50, and then all the way up to, say, growing in value by more than 90%? So you kind of got a distribution of the very bad outcomes and the very good outcomes, and then you see, well, what proportion of companies fell into all of those different buckets? And you actually find that an uncomfortably large proportion of companies would fall by more than 90%, so effectively wiping shareholders out. I can think about 18% of companies would do that in the 5 years after raising money. But a very, very similar percentage, actually slightly more, went up by more than 90% in value. So there's this kind of split, like a bimodal distribution, where you're kind of an uncomfortably large proportion do very, very badly, but actually a pretty high proportion do very, very well. And this is where it comes to the point where if there ever was a time when good active management was needed, this is it. Like there's a tremendous dispersion between those who are raising money and actually will do great for you, and those who are raising money and actually you don't want to go near those.
Okay, so that brings us to the end of part two. And part three, we're going to look at the ugly and find out, is there anything that links those companies that do well or do badly? Duncan, I'm an investor. I own a company that wants to raise some money. Are there any trends that help me figure out whether that company is going to be successful or not after a raise?
Given the outcomes that I just described, with kind of the almost the barbell of you can either do very well or do very badly, the obvious question to ask was, is there a way we can work out which camp a company is more likely to end up in? And actually, a lot of the things you think might help explain that turn out not to. At least on an aggregate level, they will absolutely matter for some individual companies, but when you try to make general kind of conclusions, they don't tend not to. So things we looked at would be leverage, so how much debt is in the business, or its return on equity, or whether either had been rising or falling, or profit growth, or whether it was a big or a small fundraising, or whether money was raised at a discount to the existing share price or a premium, or the size of that discount or premium. None of that stuff mattered. The predictive power was basically zero. But one factor actually investors would be wise to pay attention to is actually refreshingly simple. Simply ask, is the company profitable or not? What we find is that loss-making companies, this is the ugly, go on to deliver lower medium-term upside, lower median and average performance, and worse downside risks than profitable companies. For example, whilst it's kind of top quartile, so like the best 25% of profitable fundraising companies outperformed their sector by an impressive 40% in the 5 years after raising money, their loss-making equivalents fell slightly short of theirs. So you think you can identify a top quartile, so like they kind of meant to be the good companies. Even if you're successful in doing that in loss-making companies, you're probably still going to, historically, would have only just about broken even and kind of matched the sector. Whereas if you did that in profitable companies, you'd have outperformed the sector by 40%. And we actually did some kind of statistical test of significance. And this difference is statistically significant on a 12-month, 3-year and 5-year basis. So the distribution of outcomes has been much more favourable, but still very wide, for profitable companies than loss makers. It doesn't mean you should avoid loss makers entirely. Some go on to deliver very, very good returns. So the very best, like the top 10% of them, actually outperformed their sector by an impressive 81% over the 5 years after raising money. So you can do well. You don't have to avoid everyone who's a loss-making company, but you need to be especially selective in which one you back. And even within profitable companies, there is a very wide range in outcomes. Again, it points to this need to be an active investor and really kind of, as much as I'd like to kind of come up with the kind of simple rule of thumb, there's no substitute for rolling up your sleeves and actually doing some proper analysis of the company in question and its prospects.
So what disadvantages do passive investors have in these scenarios?
So passive investors, by definition, are not choosing between who's more worthy or who's less worthy. They are just investing in companies in proportion to their weight in the index. So if a company raises lots of new equity, its weight in the index will increase as a result. And as a result of that, a passive investor would be obligated to buy more of that company in order to maintain the right allocation, the right weight each company in the benchmark. So passive investors are not discriminating between these companies. They are effectively being forced to buy in response to every equity raise. Contrast that with active investors, and they actually can choose whether they'd want to invest in the raise, or even if they're not a shareholder, whether they want to buy more of it afterwards or whether they want to sell more of it afterwards. But I think a point that's important to make here as well is that the need to be active doesn't stop once money has been raised. At that point in time, it's the responsibility of the company's shareholders to hold management to account. How you execute in that strategy, how you spend the money, ultimately on the sustainability of the business model. I think, feel strongly actually, not to do that, it would be complacent, maybe negligent. So even passive investors cannot afford to be passive shareholders.
Lovely. And what conclusions can we draw from all of this?
The unfortunate reality is it's complicated. So I would say companies really benefit from being able to raise new equity. Investors can also do very well from backing companies when they're raising equity, but only if you take an active approach in deciding which ones to back. And there is no substitute for rolling your sleeves up and doing proper analysis of the company in question. I would say I've put a question for our listeners, though, who maybe find themselves in this situation, and if they're thinking about whether to participate in a rights issue when a company is raising money, might be to ask yourself, if you don't want to back that company, you should probably be asking yourself why you're continuing to hold it in the first place.
Which is a pertinent question to end the show on. We hope you enjoyed it. My thanks go to Duncan Lamont. Duncan's research, The Good, the Bad and the Ugly of Equity Raising, can be found at schroders.com/insights. There you can also read, watch and listen to lots more, including outlooks for 2021. Are any stock markets cheap at the start of 2021? And what next for Biden's climate and social policy? But if you want to get in touch with us about anything on the show or any ideas for future shows, contact us at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Remember to rate, review and subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. New shows are available every Thursday and every Monday from 5 p.m. UK time. But above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.